What's up, everybody? Welcome to Reality Rehap-Ups, the Rob Has a Podcast podcast minus Rob. Yes, I'm still trying to make that happen. We don't really have a good tagline. I've just been throwing this at the wall until it sticks. My name is Jessica Leese. Welcome to the Amazing Race Canada Rehap-Up. We have a lot to talk about for this second leg of the race as the teams went to Santiago, Chile. And with me this week is my partner in all things Amazing Race Crime. And unlike most police officers, we are trained in the art of selfie. Mr. Dan Heaton.
Hi, Jess. Yes, I'm excited to be here.
So we had a lot going on. This was a busy leg. And I'm finally starting to feel like I know these racers a little bit. And I'm really excited, though, because not only were we incredibly right about something, we were also spectacularly wrong about a bunch of other things. And nothing is better conversational fodder than being wrong about a whole bunch of stuff.
You're right. And I was wondering for a while there near the end if one of our winner picks, actually if both of our winner picks were looking a little shaky. And that was fun, though, because when a team blitzes the first leg and then in the second leg they ask where Chile is, you think, wow, this isn't going to be a walkover. This is, and then teams that you might not think will do as well finish near the very top, and you go, this anything could happen on this race.
And you know, this is something we have not seen in a U.S. Amazing Race by and large for several seasons. I mean, one could argue that Amy and Maya winning season 25 was kind of that. But this is really just kind of, it's total chaos, and I love chaos. And I maybe even thinking, like, I'm starting to have teams that I'm rooting for, like actual, like, I want these guys to win. And I'm thinking, you know, even the team that I was cynically saying was going to steamroll over everybody, if they came back now, it would already be a hell of a comeback.
Yeah, because they seemed very lost. Now that they had left Canada, they tried to switch detours. They ran to the detour. They did not look good at the task they did do besides the selfies, which basically if you were a fast walker, you did very well. And even at the end, there was that point where I thought they were going to pull a Dana and Amanda and try and run up the mountain. And I think I think a little of the end was editing. I don't feel like it was as close, but if they had tried to run up the mountain, you got the impression that took like an hour, 30 minutes, an hour. I think that would have done them in. So it was not just, oh, we're trying to fool the audience. They were in real jeopardy.
Yeah. Well, I can speak to that actually, because I've actually been to Cerro San Cristobal. That hill, it is about 3.5 miles to the top. So you try to run that, unless you're someone that does a lot of running and a lot of running with a pack, that's going to screw your race pretty hard. So I give props to Dana and Amanda for actually completing that. But if it were me, I would definitely have gone back down the mountain and found myself a cab.
Yeah, but there's that point where you hit that point of no return, where you've gone so far that you think, if we go back down, it might be too late. So you're just like, oh, it's going to be over that ridge. And it's like, no, it's not. I mean, when they started, it was fairly light. And when they finished, it was dark. And that could be an hour, but it might be conservative to say that took an hour.
I would say it took at least an hour. Because they were not, I mean, they had packs, it was hot, they were trying to walk fast. But I would imagine that going uphill that entire time, that took way longer than an hour.
Yeah, but I love the chaos, like you said, because even just the fact that they did that and the way the leg was designed, which is so, there's so much like task density. It's like they had a two-part task that wasn't a roadblock or a detour. There was just nothing easy about it, and it took a while. I mean, I got the impression, it wasn't like the leg was an hour and a half. I got the impression this was a long day, and that's not even counting the flight. I mean, this, for a second leg, this was pretty brutal.
Yeah, I loved the brutality of it. Like, this is the kind of leg I wish we got on U.S. Amazing Race all the time. I feel like this is a real, like, this is why Canada's kicking our ass. Plain and simple. And I was so impressed by everybody this leg.
Yeah, because even the teams that struggled, well,
most of the teams that struggled.
Susan and Charnjeet, they did seem like they were kind of running a different leg than the rest of the teams. Like, they just weren't moving as fast. The selfies, I mean, that I really like that task because it's kind of fun. And you get to see some – I mean, it's a cool thing to see the murals and go around. And it wasn't so easy where you did have to navigate and move around. But that totally screwed them up more than I could expect. And then after that, they seemed like they were trying but – we're moving slower. But even some of the teams, you know, that like besides that were really giving it their all. It was, I mean, you didn't get the impression that the teams that were 8 through 10, well, 7 through 9 were doing so badly. It's just, you know, but it was just the way it was designed was teams jumped in front and behind each other. And I mean, even Hamilton and Michaela showed up at the selfies in like 4th or 5th. And then did that very well because, you know, they're selfie experts. But I don't know. It was fun to watch. I mean, it was, again, like we talked about last week, there was a lot of adrenaline going because you didn't get this. There was never a point again where I felt like I could kind of see what was going to happen. And that was great.
It was really so much fun to watch. And you know, did you notice we didn't even see anybody get on a plane? We had no airport drama at all, and I kind of didn't miss it. Like, we saw one team buying tickets so we could have the product placement of the BMO card, or whatever, the cashback MasterCard from BMO, and then they held it up to the camera and smiled.
BMO is here to help. They're here to help the racers. I think there was some line like that, and I was like, oh my goodness. But the thing is, like,
it's more obnoxious than Scotiabank.
That it is. And I mean, even their commercials are a little more obnoxious if you've had to watch some. But it's interesting because I used to be somebody who kind of looked at the Amazing Race like in an old school way and said, oh, I love it. When, you know, I hate when they skip the airports. I'm all turned around on that. When you have a lot of really cool tasks and you put everybody on one plane, they're all on an even playing field for a second episode, that's great. And it's just it was great. A lot of the chaos and everything started with the fact that we got to the airport, they all got on one plane, and we didn't waste time.
Yeah, it's very true. And I think Canada has a formula down that I think is a little bit stricter than the US, and it's a lot harder. Because they pretty much every leg, there is a detour and a roadblock and a third unspecified task that is a real task that requires some measure of skill and or endurance. And in U.S. Amazing Race, often those tasks are not really tasks at all. But in Canada, it's almost always, like, even harkening back to the second leg last season, it was the second leg, they were in British Columbia, they had a roadblock and a detour. And in the middle, they had that terrible surfing thing where Sean dislocated his shoulder and they were out of the race. And that was the hardest thing all leg, and it wasn't even a roadblock or a detour. And
right.
I love that. In Regina, in the first season, you had your football detour, and you had your roadblock, and you also had to dig through all of those lentils to find the little moose toy. And the digging through the lentils was the hardest thing all leg. I think Canada has figured out you can have these incredibly hard tasks and force both members of the team to participate in the tasks. There's no way around the tasks unless you have an express pass. And you can get some really exciting drama. You can switch up the order. And you can do that more effectively than you might be able to just by like throwing random clue boxes in there.
Right. And another good thing, too, as we saw this week, is you can add more culture from the city they go to, because you're not just going, oh, we stopped at this landmark that's important, or oh, because that's the thing the U.S. does is they sometimes go box to box. But it's really just a matter of testing Can they find a cab or can they get to the right place? By putting in tasks, you have a thing where they're doing paintings or they're doing selfies by the murals. They're doing different things. So you actually get through it. And I'm like, because, you know, next week they're going to a different country. So you go through it and you say, we saw a good amount of Chile. This is pretty good for 42, 43 minutes.
Yeah. The other thing is that they went to some places that are not on the tourist map, really. Like San Miguel is not a hot spot for tourists. I didn't even actually really know where it was. It looks pretty great. I love the murals. I love that kind of street art. There's something very similar in Philadelphia. But I think U.S. Amazing Race, they would have stuck to the numbers. Like, you would have gone to the... In fact, when they went to Santiago in season 7 of the U.S. Amazing Race, you know, it was very much... You had the Mercado Central, you had Plaza de Armas, you had the library, and the pit stop was Cerro Santa Lucia. All of that is within, like, a 8-block radius, and it's all very, very touristy. And here, we got to kind of see actual people and interact with, you know, the local kids. And they went out to Recoleta, which is kind of middle of nowhere. It's not even really in the city anymore. And I love that. I love getting a real taste of not just the travel element, but also the actual connecting with locals. And I could really understand why even that simple little interaction kind of reduced Michaela to tears.
Yeah, and also they still found time within all of that to get to go to do like a quote-unquote amazing task and do the paragliding, which – and that was a really impressive view. I mean, you had some of those shots over the trees and you saw – that was another thing. Whereas – but they didn't spend 20 minutes on doing that, which it's easy to – you know, they had a few people who said they were afraid of heights. They didn't overplay that. They showed a cool task but then went on and showed other cool things. And that's what I really like, because even if one task isn't as – like that one did not affect the placement very much. But it still was something fun, and then you move on and do something else and something else. And there's just so much more variety, and depending on viewers may like different tasks.
So. Yeah, there really was something for everyone this episode. I quite liked that. But to your point about the paragliding – yeah, we got to see it. We got as much of it as we needed. And I wanted to talk about the people that were afraid of heights, because this seems really like Amazing Race 101. If you go to some place that's an adventure park and you have a roadblock, how is that not going to involve heights?
Yeah, and even the clue says, who wants a better view? Now, the odds are pretty good if you know the race at all. I mean, we in the preview talked about how some may not know the race that well, but that you're going to do something from a very high height or something, and they're talking about a view, you would think you're not going to just look at the sky. I mean, I don't know. You would think there'd be something. But yeah, the people that did it, I mean, Leilani, you know, was one. And then Sean, or was it Sean or Brent? I'm trying to remember.
I think it was Sean that did that one.
Sean, yeah. And
Sean is the slightly pudgier one, I think.
Right. And he was very funny when he said his only goal was basically to not die going down. So I guess that was the task, not to die. But yeah, so it's interesting that those two did that, though. I mean, once they got going, it didn't seem to be a big deal. But
well, the fascinating thing was that Amazing Race Canada tackles these crippling phobias in a very different way from Amazing Race US. They are very much like people just kind of face their fears head on and get through them and it's over. And I think we've seen on Amazing Race US, they linger lovingly on somebody just like sobbing and I can't do this, I can't do this, and it holds them back. And here, Leilani said she's terrified of heights, but she went right out and did it with no hesitation. She said, this is amazing, I'm glad I did it. I can't believe I did that. And when Amazing Race across the board is firing on all cylinders, it's putting people in those situations and bringing them out of them better people for it, rather than playing the fear for the schadenfreude factor, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons, too, why we come out of it liking most of the people. Because if when they linger on someone whining or crying for a while, I mean, it's really hard for somebody to look good in that scenario. And I'm sure the fear is very real, but by spending so much time, after a while, you just start to be like, come on, you know? But here they show it and they do it, and then they come out of it and they're happy, and you're like, oh, that was cool. I'm glad she got over that. It's a very different approach, like you say, and it really makes you not dislike teams. I mean, there's no one here that I'm like, every time they walk on the screen, I just go, oh. I mean, there's some I like more than others that I'm rooting for, but I can't think of any that I find just terrible to watch.
Yeah, me either. Although Dujon and Leilani kind of hit a point during this leg where I was like, okay, I get it. You guys don't really like each other. But if you don't really like someone, if you have residual resentment toward them, why would you go on the Amazing Race with them? I really don't get it.
Yeah, and I do. That was a weird fight too, because it basically was him saying walk faster and her saying no, and then him saying it again. It's almost like he, and I'm not picking any faults on either one as far as sides, but he was like egging her on knowing it would make her mad, and then she was getting madder and it built up. But the point of it was just kind of like, I want you to walk faster, and then she got mad. And so I get what you're saying. It's kind of like, well, yeah, you guys seem to fight pretty quickly, because then we contrast it with Nick and Sabrina, where he was telling her almost the same thing and she got a little annoyed with him, but it was so different because obviously their relationship is so different.
Yeah. I don't know. Sabrina, we're calling her Canadian Haley already. but she was pretty much acknowledging that, you know, she was deserving every piece of can you please walk faster that she was getting. And she looks at the camera and she says, I'm just not that fit. And, you know, those of us at home are saying, why the hell did she go on the race? But we can sympathize with her because she's so self-aware. And I think the self-awareness factor, like, this is what Dujon and Leilani are missing there, because they kind of, if they had been a little bit more self-aware, they would know what they were doing to each other and they'd be able to shut it down pretty quickly.
Yeah. And they did at the end kind of talk to each other. I mean, they had interviews where they said, oh, we need to work better as a team. But in the moment there wasn't any of that. And they did. I mean, it's at first I didn't think it really would impact their placement, but they ended up dropping a lot. And I think part of that was, I mean, it's a kind of task where if you get kind of sidetracked on a goofy squabble, teams were close together and you could go down fast.
Yeah. In fact, I think if it hadn't been for Susan and Sharnjeet screwing up that mural selfie task so royally, I think there would have been no margin for error for anybody.
Yeah. Because I don't even know. I don't understand how you screw that. I mean, there is the one type of screw up is the we've never taken a selfie before and don't know how to do it, which, you know, as you mentioned, the cops were not experts. But then this seemed to be like they didn't know how to walk around and find something. And
that seems like a pretty basic race skill, right?
Yeah, I don't get it. And maybe, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting because we've both seen so many seasons and both of us kind of pinpointed from the start last week and kind of said, there's something about that team. They just look like a team that's going to go out. And yeah, I mean, I'm okay being right because they seem nice and there's nothing to not like about them. But I feel like the group that's left is stronger now.
Yeah, on the whole, I think we are, you know, getting the chaff out of there. And I think both of the teams that have gone out really seemed outclassed from moment one.
Right. And it'll be interesting because a few of the teams that seem to be way back in the premiere finished much higher this time. So then you kind of look at who's left in the field and you say, who are the weak teams? I mean, I guess you could say like Simi and Opie have been further to the back both times or haven't been, you know, near the front. And Brent and Sean have had issues with a few tasks this time. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to say Gino and Jesse are one of the bottom teams, but that's what I like, though. It's hard to look at this group and now easily pinpoint a team or two teams that are going to be out soon.
Yeah, it's really nice when we don't know what's going to happen, for sure. So let's talk about Gino and Jesse. Have you figured out how to tell them apart yet? Because it took me halfway through my second viewing of this episode to figure it out.
My answer is no.
Okay.
A few times I had to like go back, and then somebody said Jesse to the other one, and then okay, that's Gino. And so, and this is tricky when you're trying to figure out, I mean, right away who's doing a task. Like I noticed that Gino did the roadblock. I figured that out. But it's not that easy because, you know, one of them needs to just like shave or something, so then I can figure it out much easier.
Well, I don't know if this is going to help you, Dan, but I figured out that Gino is the slightly hotter one. And he is the one that has all the tattoos. Like when they had their shirts off, he's the one that's like basically covered in tattoos. So he's a little bit taller and his face is a little more oblong.
All right. So I've written this down. Hotter, tattoos, taller, oblong face. I've got this. Okay. Next week, I'll return with a report.
And now we can move on to trying to figure out which one is Dana and which one is Amanda, because I still don't know.
I think I've got that a little better. I think Amanda has kind of – this is – like her hair is bigger. I don't know. And I just say it and you like boil someone down. I mean, I think if you put them in front of me, I could pick them out. You know, like I'm not doing a very good job of explaining it, but I feel like and I think Amanda might be a bit taller, but now I feel like I'm probably describing the opposite person, so I'm going to stop now. But I think I'm going to get that quicker, you know, and it may be because I can't put in the Gino Jesse hotness thing as well. But I think I need to work on that scale. I think I'll do that. But they're such a, you know, but well, I'll get to Dana Man in a minute. Gino and Jesse, when they chose emotion, right away, I kind of did the like hands to the face kind of thing. Like, no, don't pick that one. And because, you know, a team, you know, that doesn't know much about geography and doesn't seem to be very capable of much besides physical tasks, that's not the task to do.
It's really not, but they didn't do much better at the other one. And there was a point at which I was thinking, why aren't you at least going over and trying the other one again?
Yeah, I mean, I think they decided that they like because they were on six or seven tries. I'm not sure if it showed us. I'm trying to think if it showed us exactly how many they did for the dancing. But I think that at that point it was getting dark, and they probably thought, you know, are we going to turn around and go back? But you're right. I mean, the dancing, I have to admit, was very funny. I mean, and I'm sure I'd be right with them, but there were some people doing some just ridiculous things. And Gino and Jesse were right there with it. They were not coordinated, and they may be good at running and walking and strong things, but they're not that coordinated or physical in that way.
They are definitely not. And it was, I mean, somebody always gets tricked up by the dancing task, because there is always a dancing task. I would venture to say this is not the last dancing task we're going to see this season. And someone always runs into this, and it's always someone's kryptonite. So I guess why not Gino and Jesse? I was interested in the fact that the dancing task seemed to be, they didn't seem to be particularly picky about how you got the steps down. And there was no area where you went to learn the choreography. You just kind of jumped in and did it, which I thought was very interesting, a very unique approach, given how dance tasks are usually handled.
Yeah, there was no like trainer, it seemed to be, that took them aside and then they had to approve it. Yeah, because Brian and Cynthia get in there and Brian's like, we're freestyling, and he's just trying, and he doesn't even know what he's doing, and he's just like doing all these crazy moves. And I could see that, because almost every team on their first try or they're like, and same thing with Neil, had the same look. We're just like, it's like they were just dancing at a party or something. They weren't really sure about the moves.
Yeah, there were certain things I think you had to do. Like, I think you had to do the finishing move where the guy was, like, on his knees holding the woman's leg. And you had to do the part where you were grinding. But other than that, it seemed pretty much a free-for-all.
Yeah, I mean, it was another way that the U.S. loves to do this, but a way to get people to wear less clothes. But I do give them credit because I thought that would be, you know, they would really push it, but the racers still mostly, especially the women, had pretty on pretty modest things. So I don't feel like it was that like exploitive or anything like we sometimes see with what they give them on the U.S. version, especially.
U.S. Amazing Race would have made everybody wear exactly what the other people were wearing, and then they would have used the blur button.
Exactly. And I mean, so I appreciate that, because when you see that, you right away think, oh, this, I mean, you know, I mean, that's part of the show. You know, they generally cast attractive people. So, you know, they're going to do that. But yeah, I was impressed at least that we got to see one team finish the other task, because this definitely felt like a situation where the one detour wasn't going to get any love at all. But and that was a case where Nick and Sabrina, you know, we've seen plenty of times where teams spout that they know other languages, and then or they lived in a city for many years, and they get to the city and they look like they're so overconfident they can't do anything. This was not the case with Nick and Sabrina. I mean, they killed that task. I mean, that's where whenever I start to think that, I mean, they look out of it. They're like one of those teams that swings from one end to the other more than any other team in terms of the quality of how they race.
Yeah, and they're doing, like we said last week, they're doing that kind of Boston Rob trying to break it and find all every loophole there is. Like we saw them at the mural task. They get in the cab and have the cab drive them around. And I was thinking at first, are they going to get a penalty for that? But I guess it didn't say they couldn't do that.
Right. And I expected them to get a penalty, because especially when the race shows that, you think, I mean, they didn't play a gong or anything, so I guess, you know, but you would think that they for sure would get a penalty. And, you know, they finished in fourth, I think, and I was waiting for John to say something. Nothing, you know. So, hey, smart. They were smart again. And they keep focusing. They keep having them say, like there were several times this week where they had them say, using our brain. So you're starting to wonder if this is going to be an ongoing thing that carries them fairly far.
Yeah, I think we've drawn the comparison a couple of times already between them and Brett and Holly, and I think it's very apt, because they definitely are the kind of team that can figure out where their attributes are not and where their attributes are and make up for any kind of deficiencies that they perceive. I really love it whenever there is one of those situations where there's a detour option that nobody else is doing and a team swoops in and does it and pulls ahead. Like, every time that happens, it makes me happy, and it's not something that we get very often.
Well, yeah, because it actually fits with the original model of the detour, which is that it has its pros and cons. There's going to be one that might be riskier, but if you're good at it, you can destroy it. Granted, early on, sometimes it was climb a big hill that takes a few minutes, or, you know, something dangerous versus something like walking on a hiking trail. But they've gotten better at kind of setting up, especially Canada, setting up detours where they're hard, but in different ways. So if a team is really good at pronunciation, like me, I would be at that pronunciation thing forever. I would never get it. And the dancing, I would probably be at forever. So this would have been where I got eliminated, though I might have beaten Susan and Charnjeet. But
you know, I think we're okay at taking selfies.
Yeah, I would have been 10th. I would have figured out the dancing, but, you know, so, but I like it because it's not impossible, because you do run, it's really tricky to make detours that are hard, but don't become cruel. Like you had that one in the U.S. where they had to run up that pole and then try and grab the flag, which I think was impossible. I mean, to the teams, to people that weren't trained. But what it did is you got to see a lot of shots of people falling, and so it was hard, but it was almost too hard. I feel like it's better when you have a bit of a balance.
Yeah, absolutely. I like seeing a really well-balanced detour, which I think this one definitely was. So I'm perfectly happy with the outcome there. I'm very glad that they gave everybody nude briefs to go under their dancing costumes, because there were a couple of points where they're doing the big leap and the loincloth comes all the way up, and I'm thinking, yep. That wouldn't have been good.
It took me a minute to realize that. Like, you had Brian out there and then Nick and Matt. And at first I thought, like, wow, they're really just, you know, showing a lot. And then I realized, oh, okay, that's better, you know, because it, from far away you could barely even tell. But that, again, a nice move for everyone involved.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure if I was running this race with my father, I would have a very hard time doing this task.
Well, you know, they were having fun. It worked out. Both of them, you know, Neil and Kristen. Neil was doing some really goofy old man dancing for a minute there, but it all worked out. So,
I can't even imagine, like, if they'd shown this task last season and Suki and Jinder had to do it.
Oh my gosh, they would have. They're always the go-to in terms of like trying to think of like how would they do in this task, because they just seem to get so lost and overwhelmed by certain things and just the weird dancing and everything.
I'm hoping that from here on out, anytime they're planning a race course, the Amazing Race Canada staff, when they're thinking about what kind of tasks to have, they just imagine Suki and Jinder doing them, and that's their metric.
Yeah, though I don't think anything could be as awkward as them having to do those like poses. You know, think of a father and daughter doing that. But so we did have two examples with the dancing where there was a potential five hole that was not, did not happen. We have Dana and Amanda coming out and saying they were cheerleaders in high school, and me thinking, yeah, I don't know if that really applies. And then them destroying it. And then, of course, the obvious dancing one where we had our dancers who did not fail. So I was really disappointed.
Yeah, it was a definite five-hole subversion there. They sank the five-hole. That's no fun.
We live for it.
We live for the five-holes. And it's like giving a surfing task to Adam and Bethany. Come on.
Yes, and making it one of the most important tasks on the entire race.
Yeah.
But I digress. So trying to think of what else happened this week. Oh, Dana and Amanda again. I picked them to win. I feel like it's kind of like a different way of Nick and Sabrina, where there are times when they started out and they were like in last going off of the roadblock. And then all of a sudden they were way up there and then they nearly fell to last again. And teams that do that if you're going to, and they did this in the first leg too, I'm getting a little nervous about their long-term potential. They're very physically strong and they have a good attitude, but they make mistakes. Ugh.
Yeah. And they make big mistakes. I think later on that kind of mistake is going to eliminate you pretty much right out of the gate. So I don't know. I like when a team is really erratic like that. Because I think we're going to see them win at least one leg before they're out, and I think they're going to be out.
Well, I don't know how I could be wrong with my pick. You know, judging by my normal picking experience, they're doomed to like eighth place. But but I enjoy watching them, and of course, Brent and Sean are still being lots of fun. So I think calling them as a fun team who's just, you know, good characters is continuing this week.
Brent and Sean are an absolute delight. There are so many teams on this race where I am shocked at how much I adore them when they are on. Like, Brent and Sean and their mad selfie skills. Like, every time you see these pictures, they're throwing these like blue steel faces at the camera. And it's fantastic. And they're kind of up for anything, and they might complain a little bit, but they do it in a funny way. I really like them. I want them to go far. I want them to be that team that you predicted is going to end up in the finals despite not really being an awesome racer.
Yeah, and you saw it. They had the interview where Brent was trying to show off a face and Sean was like, you're blocking me. And it's like those kinds of things that, you know, they're fun with them because I think they're in the right spirit. They're kind of bickering, but it's not like in a mean way at all.
Yeah, they're definitely the comic relief team of the season. But the other team that I think the stealth backup comic relief of the season, and I was thinking back to a blog post I wrote for season 25 where every team that was left, and it was like, I think maybe one team had been eliminated at this point, every team that was left had some moment of absolute hilarity in the episode, and it was all different kinds of funny. And Brian and Cynthia struck me as a team, like, I didn't think we were going to see much of them. I didn't really know why they were cast. And then they are so dry, and I absolutely love it. Like when they look, when Brian looks straight at the camera, he says, "Taking a selfie is very hard because as police officers, we aren't trained in it." And he just lets it sit there. He's totally stone faced. And I absolutely love that. I love that they just kind of, it's so dry and it's so effortless. Like they're just, you can tell they're really funny people in real life.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where if you see something and you think that he's really intense or whatever, but then he throws something like that in and you're like, no, they're having fun. They may not be like in the same way that Brennan and Sean are, but, and she doesn't, they don't really show her say much, but they're, I don't know. There's something that like inexplicably fun about them. Like, you know, I mean, I guess you pretty much nailed it already, but even like with the express pass where, you know, it's just the way that like when Nick and Matt asked them, and even though they were telling the truth, the way he said it made him seem really shifty and yeah. really stranded. And Nick and Matt just kind of looked at each other like, I don't really know what to make of this. This is really strange. So I thought that was fun too. And the fact that they finished second too. I mean, it's one of those things where we talked about this. We said, because they got a lot of attention in the premiere, Brian and Cynthia, we said they're either going to go far and kind of, you know, have a lot of do well in the kind of way they race, or they're going to go out this week. I'm starting to lean a lot stronger towards the former now, and not just because of where they finish, because of also just how they are in the show.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we're going to see a lot of them going forward. I'm going to go ahead and call them Canadian Jim and Misty, because they have that intensity, but they're also like weirdly funny. You can tell they're having a good time. People kind of don't really see their potential for entertainment because they think they're just, you know, old intense people, but it is not true. And I think we might be looking at, you know, I think between them and Brent and Sean, I think we've got kind of our comedy stars of the season.
Yeah, for sure. And I love when they walked up to the dance challenge and she right away is like, no, we can't do this. And he just kind of blitzes through it and is like, we're doing it. But then they get out there and they, I mean, they look ridiculous. I mean, and but he was so intense, but in this kind of really weird, like if somebody on the dance floor at a club is like way too into it, but is dancing in a ridiculous way, I don't know. But I found it really endearing. Like it wasn't like, oh, he's so pompous. It was like, he's giving it his all. He's trying so hard. And, you know, I was really happy to see them do well.
It was like a night at the Roxbury up in there.
I almost want to go back and watch some of those again because I was, you know, you watch it so fast and this episode again moves so fast that there were these brief moments of people dancing that were hilarious. But before you knew it, it was like onto the next team, onto the next team, which is good. But there was a lot of funny moments in this leg that you could, that almost flew right by you.
I have to imagine there's probably a good hour of deleted scenes that are going to go up on the CTV website if they're not there already.
Yeah, I haven't checked it yet, but yeah, the things you didn't see, I feel like you could just show like 10 minutes of people dancing and it would be worth it because there are very few people, even the strong people as we talked about, are not particularly good dancers, and I think they're going to throw a lot of dancing challenges at this group, and it's going to be, I don't know if it'll be as epic as this, but it's, well, it looks like it's going to be good.
Yeah. I'm going to go back. I'm going to watch the dancing scenes on mute and I'm going to play What Is Love in the background.
I think that it's hard to improve on what we just saw already, but I think that would do it. I think that would be perfect.
I think it would too. So we should talk about the Express Pass. Because I think we had a lot of divided sentiment as to whether this was the right move. But first of all, from a game design standpoint, this is where the Express Pass needs to be. They did this in season 25 of U.S. Amazing Race, which I guess I'm just going to keep bringing up over and over this episode.
It was a good season.
It was a great season. And it was the placement of the Express Pass was perfect there, and it's perfect here. We're going to put it a little bit out of the way, and you got to go get it, and you got to decide whether it's worth the risk. It's like a lighter version of the Fast Forward, and it works really, really well. And here, it was a way to show off a different part of the city. And as far as I could tell, I was having a hard time finding that community center on a map. Like, if you type it in, it goes to someplace totally different, but from what I can tell, And I've been to Bella Vista. It's more or less on the way to everything else. So they kind of could have stopped off, but they would have had to go find it. And Bella Vista, it's like it's a few square blocks of shops and restaurants. And there's this patio area. And I was looking for pictures of myself in this patio area. I've got like 5 of my husband, but none of me. And he's basically sitting at one of those tables that you see the dancers are in front of. But, you know, sticking in Bella Vista, you get to see another part of the city. It's a really cool place to hang out. And you also don't waste time on it. At the pit stop, you can give away a better prize. And you also, there's a little element of risk, like somebody might be giving something up to get that express pass, which I think also gives you an incentive to be at the front of the pack in the middle of the leg, like Hamilton and Michaela were.
Right. And I agree with you completely that it's better to have it here because you know, no one hesitated because when you have 11 teams, if you're in first, you think you're probably safe. But still, if you go to another place, there's always a potential. Teams have shown they can get lost anywhere. So there's always a potential to get lost or potential to, you know, not get it. And then something happens or, you know, let's say if Nick and Matt had decided to run up the hill or something, you know, there's a chance that something could screw up. And what I said earlier, it's another cultural thing. I mean, it's a popular place, like you said, but it's another way they can experience some other part. And I know they didn't do a task, but I'm okay with that part of it, because I feel like you want to penalize them, but you don't want to just completely destroy somebody's leg. At least that's the way I look at it, kind of like the early seasons, the way the fast forward was, which I know they didn't really do anything then. They just kind of like, oh, get in a pool and get it or something. But I really like the way they did this, and it just added another element. And this leg was so packed that, I mean, you could say, oh, it didn't need one, but it was cool. And it was nice to see 3 teams go for it as opposed to 1, because that's where you add a bit of drama, another spot where people are running to get to, as opposed to if one just went, then it's just kind of like with the fast forward, you often see one goes and then it's a done.
Yeah. And it's basically the fast forward just becomes like a prize for coming in first on the previous leg. You get to come in first on the next leg as well. And this, you know, it doesn't take away from what's going on around you. And it's a way to showcase something else. And it's just kind of, I loved having 3 teams go for it, because going around looking for something and trying to find it, that was kind of an unknown there. Like, they didn't know how hard it was going to be to find. Obviously, this was very easy, but, you know, you could have burned a lot of time. They don't even really know where Bella Vista is relative to everything else. So, yeah, A+ on this. So Hamilton and Michaela snag this express pass, and then they use it 10 minutes later. How did you like this, Dan?
Well, you know, the first response I have is like, oh my gosh, you know, I wrote like, what, in my notes, because the first thought is like, they wasted it. And obviously on the surface, they used it, but it's a tricky, because, I mean, Michaela made the point at the pit stop in the interview that now people will help them because they have the express pass. Now, I think that's a bit overstated. I'm not sure how much they might get a bit of help, but it's tricky because let's say they had gone to because he wasn't, for legitimate reasons, was not going to do the dancing. So though at the time, I don't think they realized exactly what the outfits would be. But if they had gone to Emotion and then failed, then in hindsight, you say, well, why didn't they use the express pass? I mean, I guess they could have tried the other detour and then used it. But I think I'm not a huge fan of it, but I do like the way they just did it, because if you're going to use it, just use it, move on, and then try and do the next leg. Because you see teams kind of hem and haw and hesitate, and that doesn't really help very much. It's like, just make a decision and go.
Yeah. And I would even add that there was another factor there, namely that they were in first place, and they knew they were in first place. And if they use the express pass, they continue to be in first place, and there's nothing else they have to do that leg. So I could see them looking at that express pass and seeing that it was basically a voucher that they could turn in for a first place prize.
Right. And they got 6 months of free gas plus a trip. So you know, that's not so bad, because I think the problem with the Express Pass is when you have it, then it starts to dominate your thinking and you start to, you know, and we saw a similar thing last season with Natalie and Megan, where they used it, you know, not right away, not this fast, but fairly quickly they used it and then moved on. But I think they were confident enough in what they could do. They said, we don't want to do this task. Let's move on. Let's take first place. We'll deal with the next leg. It's easy to second guess them, especially, you know, depending on what comes up next week or the week after, but it got them first place.
Yeah. And, you know, the Express Pass can turn into a Horcrux pretty quickly. So yeah, good for them. I don't think it was a terrible call. And now they have to give away the second Express Pass, which could also turn into its own little version of the Horcrux if they, you know, Tim and Marie around about it and, like, wave it in people's faces and try to curry favor a little too hard, I think. But I don't think they're the kind of team that's going to do that.
Right. I mean, they said that teams might help them, but I don't see them yelling at other teams, we have an Express Pass, help us. You know, I see it being a little more subtle. And if it was me, I mean, I think we agree on this, that if I had to give one away, I'd try and give it away. I feel like it's a distraction to try and get people to help you. My thought is find a team that you want to give it to and give it to them as soon as possible. And we saw that, I think, with the Cowboys did that, where it was basically, let's just get rid of this and we'll give it to a team that, you know, they mistakenly didn't think was very good. And, that's what I would do. And one other point about them using their Express Pass is they're not a target for a U-turn in the same way. And I know that if you get U-turn, you can use the Express Pass and stuff, but it actually makes them less of a target for things like that. So it almost helps them in another way, too, to use it.
Yeah, I would almost, like, when you see the U-turn about to happen, like, give it to someone and then U-turn them.
Just to completely nullify its effect. Actually, we kind of saw that with Jenny and Jelani last season.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. You need to get that thing out of your hands as soon as possible. Wait till you see someone struggling and give it to them, because if they're struggling on that, chances are it's not the last time they're going to struggle. Give them one free pass and get it out of the way, rather than hanging on to this and letting a few more bad teams fall off the map before you have to hand it off.
Right, and then you end up giving it to a team that, who knows, could end up using it and beating you.
Exactly. So, I think we have hit all the high points here. Do we want to take some questions from Twitter?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, because we got some pretty good ones, I think. I got this one from a friend of the podcast, Phil Gourlay. He says, do you think finding a visual clue might make the paragliding roadblocks a little more interesting? You have to spot something to move on. And I think we've done this before, but what is your thought on that, Dan?
In theory, yes. However, it seems like I feel like we end up just ripping on the U.S. version a lot, which the U.S. version has had some amazing seasons, but not to use a pun there on purpose. But a lot of times it seems like it's still pretty easy. And then in a sense, to me at least, sometimes the edit will spend a lot of times with every team going by and going, there it is, there I found it. So I'm okay with the idea. I like the idea if it's executed well. But the question is then, I guess the idea is if they don't see it, they have to go back to the top of the mountain and do it again. And there is the danger then of completely killing the drama of the episode, because if one team misses it, then they're just done. I mean, that would take too long, you would think, or it might, you know, it would take a while. So I'm kind of all over the place on this one, but I'm not a huge fan of it.
We kind of have to avoid the season 26 finale scenario.
Exactly.
We don't need to send Haley up the tower twice.
All right. So we did get a question similar to what we talked about from Shane Gallagher, who said, do you think there should have been a task at the Express Pass location instead of a team just receiving it?
I like that the task is finding the Express Pass. They could hide it a little bit better, maybe. But I don't think there needs to be another task, because then we have to waste time with John explaining what the task is. We got to watch the team try it. Maybe another team decides to also try it. And then that starts to eat up a lot of more time that we could be showing people half naked and dancing.
True. And I did not want to lose any of the dancing time. So.
No, if anything, we needed like an extra half hour of the dancing.
Pretty much.
All right. We got a great rhetorical question from Alex Conway. She says, how much do you love Sabrina? Good TV-wise, obviously.
She is great. And I don't always love people that struggle epically. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. There's that fine line. And you would see with someone like Rachel Riley, who certain episodes I would love and other episodes would not. So, but in Sabrina's case, I would say very much.
Yeah, she's definitely, I did not expect her to be this entertaining. And I'm never good at calling which team is going to be the most entertaining. So I'm happy she's there, and I hope that she sticks around for a while.
Right, and I wasn't really that high on them either as good TV or for racing in a preview, and predictably, I was wrong on both counts. Kate Sears had a question, which you may know, being the Amazing Rates expert. She says, can you use an express pass to skip a speed bump, in theory?
In theory, I believe you can. I think they are very careful to say you can use it to skip any task. So I think any situation in which you have to complete something in order to receive a clue, you just give it to the person and you say you're skipping it and you receive the next clue. I believe that is how that works.
That's the way I thought of it. I just think given how the speed bumps often are, they're so easy where I feel like if a team used it, I'd kind of just do the facepalm or something on that. So, but I think they could use it. Maybe there'd be some point it would work.
Yeah, and I could see, like, especially with Amazing Race Canada, I could see someone using an express pass to skip a route marker. Like, something like what we saw today with the murals. And the murals were not that hard, but we're going to get into, like, you know, Regina, Saskatchewan, Lentils territory. And in those cases, I think you might really ponder that express pass.
For sure, I totally agree.
Yeah. So Matthew Bayless wants to know, were the Nick and Matt t-shirts specially made for the race, or is that just something they have lying around?
I am pretty certain. I'm going to say I have no knowledge of this, but I did take another look at their t-shirts. 98% sure they made them for the race.
I think they made them themselves too. Like one of those things where you print out on the iron-on transfer paper.
Yeah. Like, putting like R2-D2 on a white t-shirt or something. It's on that level. But yeah. I agree with that too. I think we're going to say two thumbs up for they made them.
Yeah. And I love that. Like I loved Mickey and Pete last season had t-shirts that had their names on them in big letters. And then they wore each other's t-shirts halfway through the race just to mess with people. And I thought that was fantastic. And it is psychologically, it's the sort of thing like when you run a marathon, you wear a shirt with your name on it so that when people are cheering for runners, they will see your name and they'll cheer for you. And I think this is kind of the same thing at play. Like having their names on their shirts means that people know who they are and are inclined to kind of help them because they feel like they already know them.
Right. Well, here's a question. I think we kind of addressed this already, but I did do some research, so I'll call it out. It's John Johnston's question about whether Nick and Sabrina should have been penalized for taking a cab during the part one selfie task. And I think you agree with me that it seems like the clue didn't say that.
Yeah, I don't think it did.
Yeah, so I did look it up. And granted, I did a freeze frame, and this is all the clue said, at least the basic clue. Take a team selfie in front of five neighborhood murals and show them to the museum curator to receive your next clue. Now, there are other notes that we don't see. You can kind of see them stuffed in this picture that will give more details. But I would assume if they had to walk, that would be in the main clue because they'd want them to read that. So looking at that, I think it was pretty much any way you could. I mean, I'm not sure what other ways you could do it. But you could technically pretty much do whatever as long as you got those pictures.
Fantastic. See, this is why we hired you, Dan, because you're willing to go back and freeze frame that stuff.
It took so long to write that down. Took at least 2.5 minutes.
Wow. That's incredible. That is, you know, that's taking one for the team. All right. So I think we have hit the major high points. We had one special request from Edward Giordano wants us to do a power ranking of all the Quebecois teams in TAR Canada history. And so I guess that means we are talking about Pierre and Michelle, talking about Alain and Audrey, talking about Brett and Holly, who are they're not French Canadian, but they do live in Montreal. And then we're talking about Nick and Sabrina. So how would we power rank them?
See, it's tough because Nick and Sabrina have only done two episodes. So I almost feel like they get an incomplete out of this. But if we are forced to, I will put them – I don't know. It's hard to say. I would think, you know, all these teams are kind of in the middle. That's, I mean, in terms of how they race.
Yeah, it's true.
So they all finished kind of – I mean, I would say probably – would you put Elaine and Audrey last?
I think so. I think at least especially in terms of character, like they were okay, but they weren't the huge explosive characters I thought they were going to be.
Right, right. So I would probably say, I don't know. I mean, Nick and Sabrina, I feel like have potential to be number one, but I'm just trying to figure out if we've seen enough to put them higher than three at this point. What do you think?
I would put them three.
That's where I had them. So here's the question. Do we like Pierre and Michelle's, you know, sort of, you know, little bit sinister play at times versus
Brett and Holly's sort of sinister play at times?
Brett and Holly's 2000 confessionals about strategy and how they have to be strategic. That got beat over our brain. Personally, I'll say I would put Brett and Holly number one because I did enjoy them as racers. But this is not a knock on Pierre and Michelle. But
absolutely not. I would go exactly the same way. And I'm not just sucking kneecaps here because Brett and Holly have been so rad to the podcast. I really think that they kind of formed a new prototype for teams. And I think we're going to see more teams like them when we have not seen very many like them before that.
Yeah, because I think Jet and Dave were probably the stars of season one. But Brett and Holly, I feel like, you know, were one of the teams that, to me, was one of the most interesting teams and fun, too. So of that cast.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching them take down Hal and Joanne.
Yes, that was entertaining.
Yeah. All right, so I think we have pretty much put this episode to bed. We've gotten through pretty much every detail. All I have left are little tiny things like Nick reading that the express passes are up for the grabs. And Brian and Cynthia's very weird eyes left, eyes right, right left, right left, right. I don't even know what that was, but it was awesome. So I guess we will just use our regular closing remarks here. Everybody who is not in Canada and trying to watch Amazing Race Canada, I will reiterate that there are a lot of different ways. You can use something called a VPN to get yourself some access to the CTV website. You can explore various other questionably legal means. Or you can become a Rob Has a Podcast patron and join our special patrons-only Facebook group where people are posting links to the episodes as soon as they get them. And that's where you can go pretty much every week to find links. As soon as somebody finds one, they put it up, and it's really fantastic. So if you're very lazy, it's worth the $5 a month. Plus, you get all sorts of extra content. You get discounts on the special paid content. You get to participate in the monthly patron casts, and the Facebook group is really a great way to connect with your fellow podcast fans. We love to talk about Amazing Race Canada and all things Amazing Race related, and you can find us on robhasawebsite.com. You can leave comments on the page. You can review the Amazing Race podcast stream in the Apple Store, and you can also tweet at us. My username is Haymaker Hattie, and you can find Dan at
PT Snob.
Yes, so feel free to tweet at us all during the week and let us know all of your crazy tinfoil Hattie theories about Amazing Race Canada, Amazing Race US, any other foreign iteration of Amazing Race. I've seen more than I care to admit. So, next week, Dan's going to find a special guest co-host because I'm going to be out of the country for a couple of weeks. I promise I'm not filming a reality show. I'm just going on vacation. So don't get too excited about that. For real, someone did actually message a spoiler board when I mentioned going on vacation, suggesting that they thought I might be going on The Amazing Race. And Amazing Race just wrapped filming. I promise, not going on The Amazing Race. But Dan will find a fabulous co-host to talk about everything for the next 2 weeks, and then I will be back. And I will be blogging, probably not next week, but the week after I'll probably be back in the blogging realm. So thank you all for listening. Thank you very much, Dan, for being here again.
No problem. This was an amazing episode. I'm really excited about this season.
Me too. And I'm really bummed to be missing a couple of podcasts in there, but I'm sure you will handle yourself in the most professional of manners. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.